Thank you, Bala, for giving me the opportunity to come here to present this, I would say, probably a newer concept that's starting to emerge. And basically what I'm going to do today is I'm going to describe a bit what this concept of soil security is and how it's developing. And then some of the work I have been doing has been looking in Tasmania, which has just started off, which I know is not in the developing world, but I also do work in Cambodia and Laos as well, but it hasn't been the focus with this particular topic. So maybe we can discuss some of that on the way through as we move through this particular talk. And I'd like to acknowledge, of course, Alex McBratney, my colleague, and Budiman Manasni, who also has been helping with some of the work along the way. So I think one of the issues that we've been facing, and I think we heard earlier from a couple of the speakers, that they were talking about the idea that this issue is a holistic approach, okay? And we talk about systems in a holistic way, and I think there's two areas that we can look in when we're talking about this holistic approach. One is to see the system as a whole, and one is we often say, we heard earlier about the technical issues and then the socioeconomic issues. And I often go to places and people talk about how they are integrated. In some areas they are integrated quite well, and often development people working in development or development economists, development scientists do that, but I think in other parts of the world these things are quite disconnected. And I sometimes think too that in the soil science community I hear that there are people who have made these connections and people who haven't. They either see themselves in the biophysical camp or they see themselves in the socioeconomic camp, and they say they need to speak to each other, but often they don't. But if we look at the system as a whole there, I think we've obviously been focusing on food security, aspects about food security, but we have mentioned water and we have mentioned energy security, and soil does play a role in all of those, as people here are quite aware of. And in water, it's about, you know, providing water, storing water, you know, filtering water, etc., as the function. And in energy security, it's about either removing the soil to gain a resource. So in Australia, the big issue for me is coal, okay, and the challenge that provides to securing the soil above it, because funnily enough, the coal measures happen to be under the best soils in the country, so they want access to them. And I also think too, and in the US you've experienced too, this debate about biofuels and whether land should be moved across to biofuels or used for food production. But I think there's also the other aspects of biodiversity protection, and often with biodiversity, that is in the soil science area, that's discussed by this, what I call the soil biology people. And the soil biology people work quite closely. Once again, there is a disconnect sometimes with the soil biology and where that sits. I remember Helena Black, who's one of the leading soil biologists in the UK, said the soil biology people need to go and speak to the soil scientists. And I thought that was quite an amazing statement. Not saying that there was a problem, but it just means there needs to be a stronger integration. These fields are starting to come together a little bit more. And, of course, climate change, as we heard about earlier, with agriculture and its contribution to climate change. But more importantly, to human health, the idea of not only securing soil that in the future it provides food, but it's going to be the source of pharmaceuticals. It's where a lot of the genetic diversity exists, you know, and people are going to start looking at that genetic diversity. And there's one area that's not focused on, there is also the aesthetics. There are sometimes people want to conserve an area because it brings recreation, it brings pleasure, it brings relaxation. So these are all things that are contributing in the whole system. So I'm not putting soil at the centre because I'm a soil scientist and I think it's the centre of the universe. The reason I'm putting soil at the centre is, we'll look in a moment, the soil is providing functions that service all of those. So as we maximise or create the efficiency of a particular function for one area, are we maintaining the efficiency or a deficiency of the function to another area? So it's trying to maintain that balance on the way through. So yes, I mean, in the food security area, in one of the papers we put out earlier, we did look at this idea of trying to identify what soil functions were seen as a primary focus, you know, to look at this topic. And it is about this idea of the sustainable intensification, you know, maximising this food production, using these functions to maximise that, whether it is through organic or inorganic applications of fertilisers, systems, etc. The same area of land and minimising environmental impact. And even when I'm working in Laos and Cambodia, there's this issue about the same area of land, especially in Laos and the upland area we heard earlier. There's not the area to transform, or there's been this demand of removing of Sweden, or what I call slash and burn agriculture. okay, and the systems that are following on haven't been sufficient to be able to keep up with the production, so they're getting a nutrient decline because of this removal, and the area that they have to conserve forests, because we want them through the red projects to conserve forests. That's our option, and we want that to happen. So these are some of the challenges. One of the issues I noticed about these functions, which are a little bit, these are a little bit earlier, that are now being developed in Europe, you'll notice none of the soil functions there include anything about archaeology, keeper of human history, health, etc. And I think they are starting to emerge and evolve, and that's becoming more and more important that they are, because a lot of the previous functions were very much about what the soil could be used for, what it could produce. So it was very much focused on that area and was ignoring the other functions. And I think they need to be brought to light, and that is starting to happen. So the concept of soil security, if you read that definition, to be quite honest, many of you might look and say, oh, that looks like soil health, it looks like soil quality, it looks like sustainability, it looks like soil protection. There aren't many changes in that, I think. There are a lot of similarities. But it is used in the same sense as food, water and energy. It's about being available, it's about having access, and it's about having the knowledge to use it, if you want, for want of a better term, or to conserve it. So that's where the definition sits. I think where the shift has occurred is there's been the creation of a set of dimensions that are focusing around this topic. And we have, as I said earlier, the biophysical dimensions. They're our capability and condition. And then there are the socioeconomic dimensions, which are looking at the capital or the economics of the system, the connectivity, how people engage with soil. We heard earlier, of course, a lot of farmers are very connected to soil. In my country, 60% of the population live in three cities: Melbourne, Brisbane and Sydney. I think, and their connection, I must say, to soil is very low. Their connection to food production is very low as well, I must say, in a lot of those areas. And also there's this issue of codification, policy, regulation, whatever term you'd like to put around that. And it's trying to, I think, to secure soil, there has to be some balance between those. It doesn't mean they all have to be equal. They'll all contribute in different ways, but depending on what the purpose is for, this will be the focus. So capability and condition. The reason we've distinguished the two, or separated the two, is, look, capability, we do know, from a land capability point of view, does have a long history. Okay, it does have a long history. People would be aware of it. I think it's been developed to different levels. I mean, in the developed world, capability has had a long history since the 60s of identifying the land, and it is being done in the developing world as well. And the issue for capability, of course, is usually trying to identify attributes or the way we can assess the soil in a more broader sense. And we basically delineate what soil cannot be used for. So we might look at a soil and say, you know, this can be used for cropping, it can be used for forestry, it can be used for horticulture, but this soil can only be used for forestry and horticulture, and this soil should be conserved. And they're given different classes. But once again, the focus very much is on production in those areas. But what I say capability really needs to recognise is it's multifunctional. Soil is multifunctional, and not all those functions are about production. And I think the land capabilities don't necessarily recognise that or don't explicitly state that. So that's why I'm saying a soil capability needs to be brought out. So we actually recognise the function. So to maintain the capability of the soil, if you like, we have to look at those functions and we have to try and preserve those functions to different levels. The debate I'm having with myself at the moment is in that, do we need then, at some times with my physics influence, do we need a reference state? Do we need, because land capabilities or the current model of capabilities talks about use, it's not necessarily focusing on a soil. So the question is, do we need a soil in an area? I think this reference state would be very local. It's not global, if you like, but do we need some sort of reference state that people can look at to show the functions are being maintained or working? That's why I think it makes it a little bit different from condition. To me, condition says, what's the state of the soil now? That's where soil quality and soil health sit. That's not new. That's what soil quality and soil health are doing. What is the soil now? What's the opportunity to improve that soil? How can we improve that soil? What techniques, which we heard earlier, are we doing to improve that soil back to that state? So I think if we look at both... and the other reason I showed that diagram, because that's actually from Tugel, who works in the States, in the United States. The thing is, too, is it's a recognition that soil changes, and there are soil changes over long periods of time, but there are also anthropic changes of soil which happen quite quickly. Okay, so I think the conditions much more under the effect of the anthropic change, but I think the capabilities often could change over a longer period of time, okay, as a delineating point. But it remains to be seen if that's true. So basically, if I had to simplify it for someone, first question is, what can this soil do? It's multifunctional. What can it do? Where, to me, condition is, you've gone in there and you've said, I want the soil to do this. I want it to grow maize, I want it to grow rice, I want it to do a rotation of the two. So you've decided what that soil is going to do. So they're two different questions, and the reason I point that out is I often see that people mix up soil suitability and soil capability. The two terms are getting mixed together, where to me suitability is, can the soil do this? It's not the multifunctional question of what can this soil do. And I think we just have to keep those separated. Basically, I mean, you need some measures for those. And there, obviously, there's some sort of properties that people would use from the soil to focus on the soil. And as I said earlier, the question is about shorter term and longer term. So do we focus on inherent, what I would call more inherent soil properties for capability? Is it more things like the texture, the depth, the stoniness? These are currently used in capability measures because they make some statement about water. They make some statement about, you know, the texture and the depth is about what's the size of your bucket, how much water can this soil hold. Stoniness is important because either it's about tilling the soil, and or if you're growing particular crops like root vegetables like taro or carrots or whatever, stoniness damages the flesh. And in some areas of the world that's not an issue, but in other areas of the world that becomes part of your 30% food wastage because it doesn't make it to the market. So That's some of the issues to look at. And then there's the manageable properties, which, of course, we could change more quickly over a period of time. So that's being focused on. So what we've been doing just in Tasmania at the moment, and this is just the start of this work, because I have to apologise, the research system has been unwell for a while, so it has got to a certain level. But what they're doing in Tasmania at the moment is, I think they're developing these databases, which aren't unique, and I'm sure they're here in the US, but what I want to make clear is they're condition databases. So a lot of people can refer to these as capability databases, but I would argue they're condition databases, because as you can see in that database, it's looking for particular attributes. It's saying, if you wanted to grow potatoes, if you wanted to grow barley, what are the limiting factors? Does this soil experience any limiting factor? So what you're identifying there is a set of categories, if you like, classes. Is it well-suited, suitable, marginal, or unsuitable? And why they fall into that class is if one or more factor exists, and they take the worst-case scenario of those in that factor. And those factors that they're looking at, of course, are like clay content, depth, pH, salinity, siccity, etc., the normal factors. Yep. Oh, okay. Really, is it? Okay, I've only been talking for 13 minutes, I thought. So basically, anyway, we've gone through and done these factors, all right? So basically what happened was we've come out and we've identified what critical limits are from what I would say a scientific or a biophysical point of view. Another part of the project which we are working on, which hasn't been done yet, is we're actually then going out and interviewing the farmers in the area to see how they understand or what they're using to make their decisions. Okay, so we're trying to build a balance between both, which we heard earlier. Okay, and of course, this is a similar process I would use in Laos or Cambodia as an approach. I will move over this. Are you sure it's time? Oh, okay, all right. Okay, so anyway, basically with the socioeconomic dimensions, I think all I want to point out here was these are obviously the way value was put on a system, okay, the way the economists might categorise the value of the system. And what I'm saying there is that I think in production systems we're only focusing on the first two. It's more about what we can get out of the soil, you know, the nutrient load of the soil. And then there's the indirect uses, riparian zones, etc., to protect, you know, other resources. But the capital, the soil capital, I think, also has to look at those optional uses. What are the other optional uses for the soil? And if we really want to do a true value of the soil, if we wanted to incorporate those other factors such as about human health, pleasure that can be derived from the soil, should the soil be conserved, then we also have to look at what I would say the existence use or the bequest use, because they aren't necessarily tangible. It's not what you're going to get now. It's what could be gotten in the future, or we just preserve this soil because we think it's good for a particular purpose. This has been started to work on already, some of the socioeconomic dimensions and from a capital point of view, and Dominati and the others have done the work. What they're trying to do is identify indicators that they can use to put value around. And in doing so, they have come up for a value of soil by either looking at the provisioning functions or the regulating functions, i.e. the direct or the indirect use in the value. But as you notice, once again, there's no consideration of the existence or the bequest value in this area. The other thing in this work that I noticed is the option values was not considered. So this work purely focused on dairy and what it could do and the values associated with dairy and those costs. And I think they worked out that the soil value was about $16,000 per hectare, but I would say that's purely from a production point of view. That's not the real soil value there, because they haven't taken in the other ecosystem service values, etc., that the soil is accounting for. So even though we're moving that way, I think it's still a deficient area. Connectivity we've heard about. All I wanted to mention here was we've heard that it's very important to make sure you have proper communication between the end users and the research. From my experiences in the US, I think that works quite well, especially with the extension services and the associations. I'd say in Australia it's becoming a challenge because of the moving of the extension services out of what I would call the public sector, and it's moving into the private sector as opposed to a land grant type approach that's used in the US. And of course in the developing world we know this is an issue because sometimes it's about the data. So what I'll do is I'll just move over that one because I've been given the time signal. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is, so basically this soil security concept that we're working on, what we're trying to do is we are trying to develop some sort of balance between looking at what the capability and the condition of the soil is, what can it do, can the soil do this, and then we need to be able to put value on the soil, because when you put value on something, then people, I think, actually have a different respect for it in particular areas. And then also understanding how people are connected and what are the policy regulations or mechanisms that might need to be if that connectivity and that value does not succeed, if you like, in that system. So that's basically all I wanted to cover today. And for those who want to know more, yes, in Texas, that's not very far away for many of you, there will be a symposium on soil security, and it won't just be focusing on soil scientists or scientists. There are economists, social scientists, and policy people who are also coming to that symposium. Okay, so thank you.
Thank you.
My question is, to reference, and we talk about soil improvement, but really do not know, you know, what will be our baseline, and so how do we do that? That's one. And other quick question is, this is a very nice concept which you have presented and putting value to the soil. How do you really do that? It looks like to me it's theoretical. It's good to start though. But how do we do it, sir?
Okay. In relation to the first question, you're quite right with the reference date. The reason I said that it's not global, it would have to be local, is you would have to, if we do need a reference date, and I'm still saying that is the question, but if we need a reference date, the reason it would have to be local is it would have to be some exemplar or some entity that recognises how the soil actually is. You know, soil has a pedogenic development as well as an anthropic influence. And so, for example, if I was looking in Europe, I wouldn't use a forest soil as a reference state necessarily. With the years of agriculture, the large extent of agriculture, I may look at a local pedon that actually says where this soil is, if you like, functioning, all the functions are being maximised. Okay, the ability to store water, the ability to provide nutrients, to produce biomass, and biodiversity. So you're trying to maximise each of those functions, and that's the soil I would try and identify in that area. Is it going to be easy? No. Is it possible? That's still being debated. But I would think you need something to work towards, otherwise you're just measuring what something is now and you don't know where it's going, whether it's improving or whether it's declining. There has been some work done on that. I must say, and he's actually in the room, okay, some worker has looked at this idea in the late 90s, where they looked at phenoforms and genoforms of soil, which could inform some of this area. As far as your second question, I'm not an economist, so I think, looking at production functions, etc., is a very, and that's why Dominati did the approach. But I think there are a whole lot of ecosystem economists who are working in this area, and they are putting other values on these functions. But the values have to focus around the soil functions. The danger in that is we have to, the only thing I will say is we have to make sure we don't double account. So when a stock is actually used, when something is given, a property is used, we don't account it several times, because that's of course when it gets corrupted.
Thank you very much. I think we should move on. Thank you a lot.
Thank you, Bala.